So with Parshas Tetzaveh, the theme of, in Parshas Tetzaveh is the, certainly the central theme is the Big Day Kahuna. In Truma, we started learning about the design and manufacture and intention of the Mishkan and its Kelim, of the Mishkan and the Samikdash itself and the objects contained inside it. And in Tetzaveh, we learn primarily about the clothes, the uniform that the Kohanim need to wear. And there's a little bit of a difficulty with the psukim, and I'm going to show you the difficulty. We'll work through two approaches in the psukim, the way Rashi and most others understand it, and then we'll see that the Gemara learns it somewhat differently and understand that. Through doing so, we'll also understand a definition of the difference between respect and honor. When do you respect somebody and when are you honoring somebody? What is the difference? The Torah says, "Kabedes avicho v'simecho." That's not respect. That's kavod. Kavod is different from respect, and we'll understand that difference. We'll be able to define that difference. And in the process, we'll also understand some interesting things about the role of clothing and uniform, and the difference between identity and image. So if you look at the sources, I've got the first four psukim of the parasha, chapter 28. And then I've got the last four psukim of chapter 28. And in between, I'll tell you what we have in between. So it starts off, Be'ato Hakri, again, if you can follow, that's fine. If you don't haven't got a sheet or you don't want to follow or unable to follow, it's also fine. You'll have no difficulty. Just listen to the translation. Be'ato Hakri v'lecho es Aaron achicho ves bono v'ito mitot b'nei Yisrael. And you bring near Aaron, your brother, and his sons with him, mitoch b'nei Yisrael, from the b'nei Yisrael. So pull them out of b'nei Yisrael, separate them out, lecha hanoi li, to become kohanim to me. So this is the origin of kohuna, starts now. Although Aaron is born, of course, as Aaron, but he's not a kohen yet. So this is where kohuna starts. Aaron, Nodav, v'aviyu, elozo, v'itoma, b'nei Aaron. Sometimes particular program get pushed together, so just words are not clearly separated. That's the family at the moment, who are the Kohanim. First thing, so now you say, okay, Aaron and his sons are going to be a Kohen. So wouldn't you expect the next thing to be, and what is the job of a Kohen? What's the job description? What's the next thing? Making clothes. Making clothes of kodesh, apicha lechovid ulesiforis, clothes that are for kovid and tiforis. Kovid is honor, tiforis is glory, majesty. Be'atot tedaber al kol chachmelei v'ashemelei sivru achochma, and you will talk to all the people who have an intuitive wisdom, who I've given this wisdom to. For osu is big de Aaron. And they will make the clothes of Aaron, lekadsho lechahanoili, to be mekadesh him, to be a kohen for me. Now we're talking about very specific clothes. We're talking about Big Day Kahuna. But in that, this is the only place that the Torah really deals with clothes. There's hardly any other place that the Torah actually talks about clothing. We've got tzitzis, we've got in the beginning with Bereishis, with Adam and Chava, after the Eitz Hadas, they covered up with clothing. But clothing for a role other than tzniyus, clothing for kovod v'tiforis, we don't have. This is the source. So we've got to see this both as teaching us about kohuna and the relationship between kohuna and the big day kohuna, but also teaching us more generally about clothing and how clothing works. So Hashem says they'll make big day Aaron, they'll make the clothes for Aaron. Lekadshoi, what is mekadesh Aaron? The clothes are actually Mekadesh Aaron. They make him holy. That is it. It's not because he's born that way, and thereafter anybody who's born a Kohen is a Kohen. But the Kedusha needed to be Mechahen, to actually serve in the temple, for that the clothes is what's in that Kedusha. So something so external, we're talking about the most spiritual part of the entire Torah, the Avodas Beis Hamikdash. The last week and the week before, we talked about spiritual energy, these various different types of energy, emotional energy, mental energy. And spiritual energy is this kind of deep down thing that's hidden way below. And what triggers the kedusha? What gives a kohen the kedusha to be able to be mechayim? His clothing. And these are the clothes that have to be made. Chushim, the ephod, the me'il, the chasunis, tashbis, mitznefis, the avne. There's the chushim, the breastplate, and the apron, and the coat, tunic, and the hat, and the belt. And they'll make big day Kurdish, holy clothes, for Aaron, his brothers, and his children to me. Let's go on to verse 40. So in between, we talk specifically about the clothes for the Kohen Gadol, for Aaron. And in verse 40, we come back to the, thank you, we come back to the general clothing for the other Kohanim, not Gadol. Ulivnei Aaron, for the sons of Aaron, they're the general Kohanim, Tasi, Ktonis, then Yiktonis, Vazdil, and Avne, Umigbois, Tasenam, Lechol, the Lucifonis. So how many clothes do they have? A Ktonet, an Avnet, and a Migbas. A tunic, a belt, and a hat. That's three. What's missing? A Chushin they don't have. So the Kohen Gadol has Chushin, the Ephod, and of course the Tzitz. So the Kohen Gadol has eight items of clothing altogether, although only seven are listed. And the Kohen, the Hedyot, the regular Kohen, has four items of clothing. Although only three are listed. So the one that's listed are his pants. The one that's missing is his pants. That comes later. And you shall dress Aaron and your brother and his children with him. And you shall anoint them. And you shall fill their hands. And you will be Mekadesh them. You will make them holy. And they will serve me as Kohen. In 42, and make them a pair of pants that should cover their nakedness from their waist till their thighs. The short trousers they had. And they shall be on Aaron and his children when they come into the Ohel Moed, or when they serve on the Mizbeach, l'shoreis b'kodesh, in sanctity. Below Yisu Avoin, and they will not sin, for Mesu causing death. The death is not a death by Bezdin, the death is a mitzvah b'day Shemayim. Hukas Oilam Lo Elazar Achrav, this is forever how the kahuna will be run. These are the laws that govern the Kohen and their clothing. The issue that we're going to be looking at is why the pants are separated out, and whether this din that it says, and they shall be worn by Aaron and his children, when they come into the Ohel Moed, and if so that they don't are not guilty of death, that is that talking about the pants only or about everything? I understand they have to wear all the clothes, but this that not wearing the item of clothing is guilty. There's a misur b'day shemayim. There's heavenly capital punishment. Is that just talking about the pants, or is that talking about all the clothing? So if you look at Rashi, just skip the Rashbam and the Targum Yonason for a moment. If you look at Rashi, down below, that's Rashi on 43, Mem Gimel, Vahoyu al Aaron, and they shall be on Aaron, which seems to imply that we're talking about the pants, because this whole section is talking about the pants. Verse 40 says, make them their items of clothing, their three items of clothing, Sephoris, and dress them and give them a Mashicha, give them anointment, and sanctify them to serve me. And then, almost as an afterthought, with verse 42, make them trousers, and if they don't wear them, it's a capital offense. It would seem almost as if the capital offense is referring to the trousers. And one would understand that, because that would be like a terrible disgrace for the Mishnah. Says Rashi, "V'hoyu al Aaron, they shall be on Aaron, kol habegodim ha'ele al Aaron haruyim." All of these clothes have to be on Aaron. Whatever's been listed for him, for Albono of Amurim Bohem, and the sons must have what they've been listed for. So the eight clothes for Aaron has to wear, and the four clothes for the rest of the Kohanim, they have to wear. This is not only about the trousers. The Voyam Eloyal Moed, Lehechel, Vechein, the Mishkan, when they come into the Hechel of the Mishkan. umesu, because if they're not wearing it, they'll die. Holamaratu, you learn shahamishamish mechusar begodim b'miso. That if a kohen serves in the temple without any one of his required clothes, any item of uniform, he's guilty of death. Okay, not by a beis din; he's not executed. But in God's courts, that's a capital offense for him to be without. So Rashi says, and the fact that the michnasayim are mentioned separately, the Orachaim explains the reason is because we're told for the other clothes you shall dress him, but not his trousers. That he can do by himself. So he puts his trousers on first, and then he comes to Moshe, and Moshe puts the rest of the uniform on. That makes sense. That's why it's separated out. But that still leaves a bit of a question of why it doesn't come first. Then say, put the trousers on yourself, and then vilbashta, then you shall put all the other clothes. It still doesn't work very smoothly, even with that explanation. If you look at the Rashbam, very interesting. Some of these are asides that are really cool. This is just interesting to know. So just before the Rashi, we've got the Rashbam on verse 40. The chovod u'sifaris, you shall wear them for honor and glory. The fisha hamigba ois al harosh, tzrichim yipui no'e b'yosef. The hats that you wear on the head have to be particularly dignified. Now that's really interesting. That means that the Rashbam is learning. If you look at verse 40 inside, up and above, that's the first of the second set of psukim. You shall make tunics for the sons of Aaron, and belts, and hats. So what is the kovod u'sifaris go according to the Rashbam? On the hat. The hat is glorious and majestic. That's what the hat is. The rest of the clothes are clothes. They're important, and he has to wear them, and if he doesn't wear them, he's in trouble. But the kovod u'sifaris, that goes on the hat. And says the Rashbam, a hat has to be particularly dignified. And there's a piece of Targum Yonason in a Kitiso that reads the Yat Mitznafta de Butso, the Mitznefes made of boots, the Yat Bartzitz Krivaya de Butsio. And the Bartzitz of the hat must be made also from boots. And the Bartzitz of the hat, the Perish on the Targum Yonason says it's the brim of the hat. The part that sticks out, that's where the dignity of the hat is in fact in the brim of that. So even though you're talking about a head covering from thousands of years ago, he already writes that the hat had some kind of a brim. It wasn't just a hat that was put on here. I raise this here just because the whole issue of wearing a hat and why. What would you say today in the way that from people who wear hats today, black hats, not black hats, doesn't make a difference. Is it covered as tiforis? When you see somebody wearing a hat, see a Shiva guy wearing a hat, do you experience covered and tiforis?
Both.
You feel covered and tiforis, because that's what it needs to be. See, it's interesting. Hats are very interesting because firstly, They frame the head. So as far as we're concerned, the head is the most important part. That's why we cover it, frame it. The idea of a hat, talking particularly about a man, the woman's head covering is not for altogether such different reasons in some aspects of it. It's complex and multifaceted. But for a man, the head covering is to frame the head. The head is the glory. The head is the most glorious part of the body. That projects, that's where the energy is, that's where the personality is, that's where the Tzelem Elokim manifests, that's everything happens at the head. And the hat frames the head. So it's important from that perspective that Rashbam says that. Amikbos halarosh tzrichim yipui noye beyoseh, that's because of what a hat is. A hat crowns the head, it's a crown. The other thing we see is that hats define people more than anything else. And it's funny, even in this day and age when hats are not all that popular, you know, you see somebody with a red velvet yarmulke on his head. What does that mean? He's a cardinal. He doesn't have to be wearing anything else. You know what he is. From the, you see somebody with a police helmet on. You see somebody with an army hat on. You see a person with a clown. You see a clown hat. All you have to do is put on a hat. If you want to go to dress up in costume for Purim, all you have to do is put on a funny hat, and you're already dressed up. if you put on a funny shirt or you put on a funny jacket, it doesn't work that well. Nobody knows quite what you're trying to be. But if you only just want to take one to be Yotze, the thing of dressing up, you don't want to go with a whole costume. You just want to look a little funny or whatever. You take a funny hat and already you change your whole mitzvah. A hat changes who you are. A hat, more than any item of clothing, a hat can change who you are. But all the more reason, says that the Rashbam and the Tanya, that but then it's important that the hat has to be dignified. It's very, very interesting. I've often spoken about it because it's so weird. So nowadays, for men, wearing a hat is not a normal thing. Mm-hmm. So people don't normally wear hats. In my firm, with my team, it's already, we play a game. When we're walking through an airport or in the streets of a city, wherever, in the south, in the northeast, here, it makes no difference. They take bets as to who's going to be the person who's going to say, "Wow, I like your hat." Because it happens every single time. So you begin to wonder, it's not fashion. Nobody else wears them. Why do people, and sometimes I've stopped and asked people, why, what makes you say that? And we get into an interesting conversation. But it's something that even when not fashionable, adds dignity if worn in a dignified way. If it's worn in an undignified, a hat is also a thing that makes clowns wear clown hats. Dancers wear dance hats. It can also do the opposite. It can make one look ridiculous. And one has to be very careful, certainly the Kohanim, but everybody, since we're all a Mamleches Kohanim, is to be careful that we look dignified. And hats are one of the ways that one of the things we use. If one is wearing a hat, it's really important that the hat should be dignified, not a hat that makes one look ridiculous. Better off without that. So it's just interesting, the role of the hat, the dignity that needs to be there, and altogether the role of the clothing. Furthermore, the Ramban says, let's go into the Ramban here, the Chavod Lisifois. What does that mean, that you must wear the clothes? And the Ramban does not learn like the Rashbam that this is only talking about the hat. He says it's talking about all the clothes. Shiyeyeh nichbad u'mefo'ar b'malbushim nichbodim u'mefo'arim. The Kohen Gadol and the other Kohanim have to be honored and majestic with clothing that is honorable and majestic. That's what it is. It's about that the clothing projects that honor and majesty. Kamosh Omer HaKosuv, and he brings a posuk, Ki Eile HaBegodim Levushei Malchus Hem. These clothes that the Kohanim wore were not Jewish clothes. They were royal clothes. Kidmuson Yilbushu HaMelochim Bizman HaTorah. The kings used to wear those clothes in the time of the Torah. Which kings? Where were the kings? Goyim. The big day kahuna were the royal clothes of Goyim. So what would be the equivalent today? It's just Strymel. So you know, it's just Strymel. People wear Strymel. Strymel, the princes of Russia used to wear Strymels. And a long coat. What was a long coat? A morning coat people used to wear until not so long ago, when the president used to get inaugurated, he used to wear a cap on it, didn't he? He used to wear a long morning coat. With tails. Sometimes with tails, sometimes not with tails, but these were things that princes used to wear. So now what do princes wear? what is a prince wear? Whatever it is, a good suit or whatever. But what's important to realize is it was high fashion. We sometimes look at it now, we look back at it and say, these were these weird sort of Korean clothes that they used to wear. No, this was an Armani suit in those days. That's all it was. It was the Big Day Malchus. And when we talk about Jewish clothes, I've always explained that Jewish clothing simply means the ordinary Jew dresses like the upper echelon of the non-Jew. That's Big Day, that's Jewish clothes. There's no such thing as Jewish clothes. What's Jewish clothes? A long black coat, that's not Jewish. A shtreimel is not Jewish. A hat, a jacket, a tie, none of it's Jewish. We don't have Jewish clothes. It's about a Jewish image. And the Jewish image is a Mamleches Kohanim. That since we're a Mamleches Kohanim, we dress the way the non-Jewish world dresses at its upper echelons. The ordinary Jew dresses the way the upper echelon of the non-Jew dresses. And look how much Torah we forgot. I mean, I can say these things, you look at it and you would think, it doesn't make sense. Like, from another, that's not how we live. My point. The way we live is not Al-Pi Torah. But that's the way a Jew. Now, very interesting, because if we go back to the last 2 weeks, where we talked about potential exceeding actual, and about containment. Is clothing about containment or is clothing about projection? It's both. So what, how does it work both? How does it contain and project? What is it containing and what is it projecting?
Hiding.
Yeah, so the hiding, as far as snooze is concerned, so that, but here we're not even talking about snooze. The only part of the cloning here that affects snooze is the mechnasayim, and we're not even sure whether that's its role here or not at this stage, but everything else is l'chovod of the tiforis. So when we talk about covered in tiforis, and the Ramban says that's the way kings used to dress, and he goes on to bring all sorts of proofs to that purpose. But that each item of the clothes he goes through and shows that that's what the kings used to wear. Is this projection or is it containment? And here we come to the difference between image and identity. So we touched, I think it was last week, it might have been the week before, we touched on the idea of the different rishus. There's a rishus harabim, there's a rishus hayalim. That there's private domain and there's public domain. And the way we act in public domain is different from the way we act in private domain. And the fact, we talked about the fact that today our private domain has almost disappeared. We almost don't have it. That place where we can work on our own depth, where we don't have to worry about what people are seeing, what people are thinking, and we just can work on ourselves and be ourselves and build ourselves and strengthen ourselves, that's what we do in Rosh Hashanah. And from a physical perspective, that's the home. And the Rosh Hasharabim is the street outside. But it's not just that. Whenever, in all situations, there's a Rosh Hasharabim and a Rosh Hashayochi, there's an image and identity taking place. Whenever you're speaking to somebody, you're addressing a crowd of a million people, there's a Rosh Hasharabim part of you and there's a Rosh Hashayochi part of you. And they need to be aligned. Integrity means the alignment of the two. They're not the same. They're different. But they need to be aligned. If they're misaligned, then there's no integrity. So clothing... Let me take a step back. Image protects identity. Because your image means the public doesn't get to who you really are. If you are who you really are in public, if you let it all hang out, and you believe, I don't care, I'm going to be myself, and you're going to get me just as I am, and that's the way I'm going to be, you're exposing your identity. And in that case, you're exposing your identity and opening it to erosion and to attack. And the identity gets very damaged in that process. Identity is very, very, very fragile. It's very fine. It's spiritual. Identity is incredibly fragile. Image is not. Image is exterior. And image is something we can change and we can modify and we can repair and we can prove and we can do all sorts of things with image. But identity takes years and years to build. If your identity gets damaged, it can take you years to rebuild it and you know, maybe never will. If your image is damaged, you get some image consultants in and they tell you what to do to fix it and then you're okay the next day. It's not a big deal. That's what image is. Image is wonderful. And it provided there's an integrity and the image is not completely out of control, but the image doesn't allow people in. Now, if you just hide your identity and you don't have image, then what do people experience of you? Well, they experience nothing. Nothing. You're invisible. You come, you're an introvert, you kind of hide in the corner, you don't speak to anybody, nobody, they don't even notice you were there. Was he there actually? I didn't see him, didn't notice him. You can't have impact. You can't influence people. You can't engage people. If you leave both your identity and your image, if you hide your identity and you don't have image, then you're not engaged. If you engage people with your identity, then you're exposed. And what starts happening now is the expectation of people starts messing with your identity. So now you're getting these messages back from millions of people and from the media and from everything else around us as to who you're meant to be. If all they see is your image, then you can make a kind of a distant decision. Okay, they want me to be like this. Okay, I can do that. You modify a little bit and you give them what they want. Or you say, I'm not prepared to be quite like that, but I'll be like that. You've got control over your image and they haven't touched your identity. But if your identity is what you engage the world with, then the world's expectation messes with your identity and you lose control of who you are. And you don't have an identity. And that's one of the biggest problems that we face in modern life, particularly in the United States. That because we haven't created these barriers between Rosh Hasharabim and Rosh Hashayachi, between image and identity, and we've confused them, we've actually brought our identities out there and allowed them to be molded by others instead of by ourselves. Our image can be molded by others. We just have to make sure it's aligned.
That's what reality but we television can't have, is.
But we can't. Reality television is a good example of that. It's exactly that. Television is a place where if you go there, all you should take there is image. You would never take identity into television. Why would you do that? You would hope it's an honest image. But it would only be image, not identity.
There's one aspect of identity which is important in the function of a clothing in the demonstration of the office itself. In other words, the clothing represents really basically the image of the office. But if you don't take the individuality of the identity and inject that into the function of the office, then you have an office or a function of that clothing which is identical in every
It has no soul. So you're absolutely right. So the relationship of image to identity is the relationship of body to clothing. So you see somebody, you've got very little idea about their body. You see them as they project themselves to you with their clothing. But the fact is their clothing fits them, hopefully. If their clothing is ridiculous, then there's a lack of integrity. If you see if a farmer, a peasant dresses up like an army general, it doesn't take very long for you to feel it doesn't work. So the image always has to be the clothing of the identity. That what the world sees is just the image. Again, so the image, the movement of the image is the identity. The expression of the image is the identity. The beliefs and values of the image is the identity. But what the world sees is still the image. Are you with me? It's such a subtle difference, and yet it's such a vital difference. It's to know when you're an image and when you're identity, and what the relationship between the two is. Now, what becomes really interesting is if you look at a piece of Gemara on the top of the next page, a piece of Gemara from Zvachim 17b, Zion Amud Bey is from Zvachim, there's a Mishnah that says if a Kohen performs a service without his clothes or without the appropriate clothes, all of them, then the service is posel. Then he's pasel the korban. If it's a korban, the korban is posel. It's a serious consequences. Ask the Gemara, minalan, where does that come from? Where do we know in the Torah that if a Kohen is not properly clothed, his avoda is a problem? We know that he could be guilty of death, but we don't know yet that his avoda could be posel. Omer Rabbi Avo, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Umatubo Mashmid Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Avo said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, some brought him as Rabbi El Ozer in the name of Rabbi Shimon. The Omar Kro, again, these two words are running into each other. The Omar Kro, because the Posuk says, Vehigarta oisom avnet, Aaron of Onov, and you shall put the belt around them, Aaron and his sons, Vehovashta lehim mikbos, and you shall put a hat on their heads, and that will be a kuhuna for them forever. Now look at these words carefully. Bizman shebigdehem aleihem, kuhunoson aleihem, says the Gemara. See from that verse, when they are wearing their clothes, they're wearing their kuhuna. Ein bigdehem aleihem, ein kuhunoson aleihem. When they're not wearing their clothes, they're not wearing their kuhuna. Now, what does that mean? Think about it carefully and look at the words carefully. Can the Kohen marry a divorcee if he's not wearing his clothes? If he's not wearing his Kohen clothes?
He can't marry her anyway.
Well, it says if he's not wearing his clothes, and kuhuna also not there.
He can't marry her anyway.
Why? So you're saying he can. He ought to be able to marry a divorcee. Now, interesting. No, what's wrong with that?
Because he's forbidden to her.
Says who? You're learning Gemara. This is the source. Now you're coming with stuff you've learned the last 40 years from my brother and others. And you know, the Gemara, start from scratch. This is the Gemara.
I know some Kohens who are very happy to hear this.
We're not finished yet. We're just exploring. We're just analyzing. So the Gemara says, with their clothes on, they're Kohen. Without the clothes on, they're not Kohen. But it doesn't actually say that. What does it say exactly? When they're wearing their kuhuna? Their kuhunos. They're wearing their kuhuna. And what does it mean they're wearing their kuhuna?
So their identity.
Well, their identity hasn't changed. They're still kohanim. Their image has changed. They don't have an image of a kohen. And you can't serve in the temple if you're not projecting kuhuna. fact that you're a Kohen is not enough. So if you imagine, for example, you've got a professor giving a lecture in a lecture hall, and he's got his academic crown, gowns on, and he's got his academic cap with his tassel on, and you look at him, you'll say, what is he? Professor. Clearly he's a professor. And if that professor then finishes the lecture and takes off his gown and takes off his cap, and he walks into, comes down here, and he sits down at Jeff's in Pico, and he has a hot dog. And you walk past. Is he still a professor? His identity is still a professor, but it's not the image of a professor. You wouldn't know that he was a professor. He's not projecting professorship at that time. So his ability to so we're looking at two things. We're looking at the ability to project who you are and who you are in essence. Who you are in essence is your identity. Only you know that. When you're sitting at Jeff's eating your hamburger and somebody walks up, they don't know who you are. They don't know you're a Kohen. They don't know you're a professor. Mm-hmm. They don't know anything. What do they know? They see an ordinary guy sitting there. So where's your identity? You've got your identity, but nobody else can experience that identity. When you dress the part, meaning not just the clothes, but the whole image, if the image is there, then it becomes very, very clear to anybody who's there exactly who you are and what you are and where you come from. So the idea here, so we see in this Gemara is fascinating because this is the Gemara that most clearly explains the separation of identity and image, the need for them to align, you're still a Kohen, that there's a difference between Kuhunosan Alehen and Ein Kuhunosan Alehen. And that applies in all areas of life. Who we are, you've got to make a decision as to whether you're bringing who you are into the public domain, because if you are, you need to do that with image. You can't do that with identity. And then you've got to say to yourself, so what is the image and who am I? You've got to start with the question of who am I? And all the different levels. Who am I? I'm a Jew. Is that part of my identity? Okay. Do I want to project that? How am I doing that? When I'm walking this, how am I projecting that I'm Jew? What's the projection? Kippah is one of them. So then you might go a little bit further. You might say, I'm an Orthodox Jew. And how am I projecting that? And is a kippah enough of it? Does that in itself project? Is that enough of a projection? These are the things that one has to, and if in a situation that the person's not wearing a kippah for whatever reason, so now what's he using to project? Or you're just saying, that's not part of my identity. It's part of my culture and my heritage, but it's not part of my identity. And it's different than you don't project.
But that depends on the role, doesn't it? Kahuna is part of the Avodah, is the
profession.
Projection. So, not evident, the one who has no Avodah, no specific role, he must project it in the way that he has chosen for himself, if he doesn't have that.
Absolutely. And part of it will be a professional role. So when you look at one's side, when you look at your identity and you use image to project identity, part of that is profession. That's one of the images. Profession is one of the clothing items that we use. It's the way people experience it. That's how we engage with the world. So then you need to project that image. If you're a teacher, then you need to project the image of a teacher. If you're a physician, you need to project the image of a physician. So that the world can experience you for who you are, but not getting to your identity, but understanding who you are sufficiently from the way you project your image. But today, where we're confused between what's image and what's identity, and we don't really know identities, and we don't express our images, and we don't put a lot of effort into that, we become very, very confused, and our ability to impact and to influence people with who we really are becomes very, very limited. And certainly social media and all of that play an interesting role in the whole destruction of the boundaries between Shisa Rabim and Shisa Yachid and image and identity. You see the kind of things people put online, you see they haven't got a clue. They're completely clueless as to what is Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and what is Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Facebook is Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, it's not Rosh Hashanah Yachid. No matter how many people you want to exclude from it, Facebook is already Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So now that's image stuff, it's not identity stuff. Putting your identity out there begins to erode your identity. But not putting your image out there at all, it's difficult for people to access you. So we're living in a world where more than ever we need to understand this interplay between image and identity. Let's do one more piece, which is the Meshech Chochmah, who takes a different line based on the Gemara you've just learned. So the way the Gemara's learned it, by the way, what is this? Okay, let's look at the Meshech Chochma inside. He says, starts off by saying, "V'hine kol dava sheyesh bo kavod bihe yosei lo yihye b'chisroi no b'chisus." The Meshech Chochma starts with an axiom, and he says, anything which has kavod, has honor if it's present, will not have degeneracy if it's absent. Again, anything which is honorable if it's present is not degenerate if it's absent. Let's look at the converse and then you'll understand it clearly. Aval dovo shebehe'edero yeye b'chisus. But something, the absence of which constitutes degeneracy, lo yeye b'yoso shlemus v'chovet. Its presence doesn't create perfection and kavod. So, for example, if you are not courteous to somebody, is that a deficiency? That's a deficiency. So, is being courteous a kavod according to the Meshech Chochma? No. If not being courteous is deficient, then being courteous simply means you're not deficient. That's not honor. That's minimum standards. That's entry level. So the Meshech Chochma says, be careful to distinguish between what is entry level and what is exception. Because kavod has to be something that you don't have to do. Kavod has to be something that if it wasn't there, nobody would notice and say, look how he behaved. If people would look and say, look how he behaved, that wasn't kavod. No, then it's got nothing to do with kavod. Then it's got to do with courtesy and derech eretz. Yes, so to treat your parents with courtesy, that's not kibud avim. To treat your parents with respect is not kibud avim, because if you would treat them disrespectfully, that would be terrible. So therefore, that's why the Gemara says what kibud avim. What is the Shulchan Aruch says kibud avim? What are the actions? What are the examples? Sorry? Yeah, but what are the specifics? What are the specifics?
You don't sit in his chair.
Now, sitting in somebody's chair, is that pizzas? Is that degeneracy? It's not. Sitting in somebody's chair is just sitting in somebody's chair. It's casual. But to say, no, I don't sit in that chair. That's my father's chair. It's called. That's the Gemara. The halacha she lays out. Not disagreeing. Is there anything wrong with disagreeing with somebody, especially if you're a bigger expert? When the Shulchan Aruch says you mustn't disagree with the father, with your Rebbe, it's not saying if you know nothing and he knows everything. I'm not talking about a 10-year-old mustn't disagree with a 40-year-old father. It's talking about a 40-year-old PhD in technology, disagreeing with a father who's come from Eastern Europe and doesn't know how to turn on his computer. And the father says, I think this computer is really a lot of nonsense. It's destructive. I think it's horrible. The child has to be able to say, not be able to say, no, you're wrong. They're not allowed to say that. And if he would say you're wrong, would that be terrible? No, as far as the world's concerned, if he'd say it in a nice, courteous way, nothing wrong with it. That's why it's covered when you don't do it. You follow what he's saying? Kavod means doing something which if you wouldn't do, nobody would notice. Not something that if you wouldn't do, people would notice and say, that's terrible, that's disrespectful, then doing it is not kavod. That's the level of kavod. So when we talk about kavod for Torah, that means treating Torah in a way that is far beyond the way you would treat anything else, that nobody would notice if you didn't do those things. V'hinei begodim elu, yiyu behava yosum kavod. These clothes we're talking about, having them is kavod, because the Ramban explains that they are the clothes the king wears. You're just an ordinary kohen. Why should you be wearing clothes that the king wears? And if you're not wearing clothes that the king wears, you're just wearing nice clothes. Would anybody turn around and say, "Look at this kind of slovenly person"? You wouldn't say that. See these clothes? That's kavod. Balan michlasayim belovesh belovshoyisam enam bigdei kavod. But the trousers are not big, they're covered. Why not? Ulam behederim bupchitzus, because how can you walk around without them? So since walking around without trousers would be disgusting, trousers are not big, they're covered. They're just things you need to wear. That's just because of decency, that's not covered. But a jacket, tie, that's why a tie is important. So a tie is, the people say, often you'll hear from people saying, a tie is the goyim wear tie. What does the Ramban just say? The goyim wear big day kahuna. The goyim wear all the clothes that we wear. So is that a reason not to wear it? What's beautiful about a tie is that you don't need it. That's what's amazing about a man's tie. Women have lots of items of clothing like that. They wear lots of things they don't need just to look good. But men don't. Men can't do. They're more minimalistic. Tie is the only thing you wear when you don't have to. So why are you wearing it? Just COVID. That's why in some yeshivas in Eastern Europe, they were absolutely makbid. Ties, absolutely insistent. But what's it for? Why? That's because it's COVID. Because it's a piece of clothing you don't need. That makes it COVID. The same applies with a jacket. So in a very cold climate, a jacket is not COVID. A jacket is just a necessity. To wear a long jacket or tails or whatever it is, to wear something very smart and dignified, that would be COVID. In a hotter climate, in a warmer climate where you don't need a jacket, you wear a jacket, that's COVID. That's the way one dresses for COVID. So Shim lo yilbashu sum yepchisus v'chayev misa. And if you don't wear trousers, you're chayev misa, because that's disgusting. So how's the Meshech Chochmah learning? What is the issa, the misa going on? What is the when the Torah says you'll be guilty of death, the Kohen will be guilty of death if he doesn't wear them? What's that going on? The pants, which is what it says. Verse 42 is on the pants. 42 is the pants, and 43 is the death. Is the death the says the Meshech Chochmah. That's clearly talking about the pants. Don't wear the pants, you chayiv misbidei shemayim. If you don't come dressed with the proper pants, that would be a problem. That death sentence doesn't apply with the other clothing. The other clothing is COVID. If you come without COVID, you don't get death sentence for not having COVID.
Forget your pants.
But if you forget your pants and you come to the Beis HaMikdash, that's not a good thing. Varak al avodo mishum zarus. But the fact is, there is a death sentence for that as well, for not coming with your big day kubuna. But it's for a completely different reason, says the Chokhmah, based on the Tosfos in Zevachim. The reason is, if you don't have your clothes, then what are you? You're not a Kohen. You're not projecting your kahuna. What is the din if somebody comes into the Beis HaMikdash and acts like a Kohen without projecting the image of a Kohen? Death. So says the Meshech Chokhmah, the halach is the same. The truth is, no matter which item of clothing you don't have on as a Kohen, there's a misubidei shemayim, there's heavenly death. But for two completely different reasons. The death that is mentioned in the Pasuk is only for trousers. The death that is mentioned, that the Kohen would be chayav for coming without clothes, is because of zarus, is because he doesn't have the din of a Kohen. Kohen permitted to function on the Beis HaMikdash, he not only has to be a Kohen in his identity, he also has to be a Kohen in his image. Otherwise, he's not permitted to do that. So that's the piece of Meshech Chochmah. So what have we got here? Two different ways of understanding these psukim. The psukim talk about the clothes in one place and the trousers in the other, and the psukim talk about honor and dignity, honor and majesty. What is the honor and majesty? So we have one view going all the way to the Rashbam, who says honor and majesty is only that. That's where all the honor and majesty are. The rest of the clothes, people wear clothes. But to have a special hat, that's what differentiates. That's what sets you aside. The other Meforshim take that the Kovod and Tiforos goes on all the clothes. It says the Meshech Chochmah based on the Gemara with the exception of the trousers. The trousers are not Kovod and Tiforos, and it doesn't use the word Kovod and Tiforos for the trousers. Kovod and Tiferes is used for the different batch of clothes on their own, because the reason for the trousers is not because of COVID, because you can't, by definition, you can't have COVID for an action without which you have degeneracy. If something is seriously impaired when you don't do it, then doing it isn't COVID. Doing it is just simple entry-level requirement. Whereas the other big day kahuna are not really required. You could wear any clothing to come specifically with those clothing of the big day kahuna, which are very beautiful clothing, as the Ramban says that kings used to wear. That's lechovah the latifores, and that gives you the image of the kohen and allows you to function. So in terms of understanding it with kahuna, we understand it. What does it teach us for ourselves? What does it teach us about clothing? It teaches us that we have identities, we have image. Our identities are deep, deep down. Who we really are, very few people know our identities, and that's good. same as we learned last week, that the Aron has to be covered, and the same as we learned the week before, that one has to, all the Mishpatim are there to hold one back from the passions of Chemda, so that the potential always exceeds the actual. So the identity should always be greater than the image. Image should never be greater than the identity. That the problem today is most people's image is bigger than their identity. Yeah. And when you strip away the image, you find there's nothing there. That's the world in which we live. We live in a world that, I mean, we talk about the fact that we live in a world which is so alien to Torah. And sometimes we think it's a wonderful world. We're free to keep the Torah in a way we've never been so free before. True. There's more Torah being learned and studied than ever before. True. All these things are true. And yet, we're further away from the Torah than we've ever been before. That understanding, we live in a world where over and over again we get disappointed when we find the image outstrips the identity. What happened with Lance Armstrong? Why is everybody so angry? Why is everybody so furious? Because we knew something about the identity. We thought he went through the suffering and he conquered the suffering and he was open about it. But you know what would have happened had Lance Armstrong not revealed his identity? Only his image. I'm a cyclist and my job is to win. My cancer is none of your business. And then we would have found this out. What would the world have said? Push the boundaries a bit. not a nice thing to do. It wouldn't have been this anger. Anger is because he put his identity out there and we discovered it. It was quite interesting. We were talking, Anna and I were talking about the various different cases. You've got Tiger Woods. He'll win a few games and it'll all be over. And be forgotten. Yeah, what's the difference? What's the difference? Why will they forgive Tiger Woods and they won't forgive Lance Armstrong ever? Because Tiger Woods never put the image of a tzaddik. You never got to know. We didn't know what the identity of Tiger Woods. All we knew is the image. The image is he's a golfer. He's a good golfer. Knows how to play golf and wins games. That's all we knew about him. Nothing else. Had a wife, family kind of thing. That's all. We didn't know. We weren't allowed into his identity. So when his identity smashed, well, we didn't know anything about you. We didn't feel betrayed. You're still a golfer, and that's all we knew about you. Take it even further. Take it with the fact that the world forgave Bill Clinton. He never said he was a tzaddik. He never said he never portrayed himself that way. He always portrayed himself as a guy and one of the guys and a bit of a playboy, and a good president, a guy who knows how to govern. And he did know how to govern, and he did a good job of governing, and his identity kind of took a bit of a knock. But he never put his identity out there. Lance Armstrong put his identity out. And that was his mistake. That was the mistake, to put that identity out. We have to be very, very careful when we put our identity out there. Put the image out. And the image should be aligned with the identity, always. If the image exceeds the identity, then when we begin to get to know, the image eventually fades, doesn't it? It can't be kept alive. It can't be kept dynamic if it's not being driven by an inner force, which is that identity. But what do you nourish? You nourish the identity. So you have most people nourish their images. Most people spend more time nourishing their images than nourishing their identities.
But how many people really know who they are?
Well, that's what we were talking about. So that's what we talk about Torah. What Torah is for is to discover who you are. Get to who you are and to learn how to nourish who you are, not only how the world sees you. So if you go to college to get a degree, are you nourishing image or identity? Image. Important. It's a good thing. Now you go, you practice in the area of your degree. Or you build a business. Are you in the world in business? Are you in the world of image or identity? Image. So how much of our time is in identity? Now we go to shul. Now it depends what happens in shul. If in shul we're socializing and it's the Kiddush club and all that, are we busy with image or identity?
Image.
And if we get all upset when we didn't get an aliyah we should have got and we didn't get, is that, are we busy with image or identity? Image. Sitting in shul and we're connecting with the Ribbono Shel Olam, we're watching each word we say, we're taking it in, we're feeling ourselves deeply, pushing on the shama, we're nourishing identity, not image. But we spend very, very little time nourishing identity. So of course, as time goes on, we get more wrapped in image and less rooted in identity. So this understanding of kuhnason aleihem, you're a kohen, of course, your identity is a kohen, whether you wear your clothes or not, you're a kohen. But there's such a thing as kuhnason alecho. Are you engaging in the world? Is your interface with the world one of kuhn? That's where you've got to examine. That's what you've got to explore all the time. So for us, the message is what we've got to focus on is getting into who am I? Who is my, what is my identity and what is my image? Are they, what do I want my image to be? Am I happy with what my image is? Is my image true to who I am? Is my image less than my identity? How much work am I putting into my identity? How much into my image? Is it balanced? Am I growing my identity, or is it the same as it was when I was a kid at school? So my identity is still a teenager, and my image is this kind of this adult with all these responsibilities and authority. Am I completely out of line, or is the identity building up to fill the image, and in fact exceed the image? If one were to rip aside the image, what would we find? Would we find somebody much bigger than his image, or much smaller than his image?
Like the Wizard of Oz.
These are the things like the Wizard of Oz. So these are the things to reflect on, and to actually do some practical things. I sent around after the last year some ideas to put into practice. I don't know if anybody tried and had any experience in trying to actually see what it's like to have identity stuff that nobody gets to know about. Sometimes you've got a nice thought, you've got it about Torah for Shabbos. There's an enormous urge to share it. And that's a very good urge. But to have three Divrei Torah, and you're only going to share one, and the other two don't get shared, they're yours. That's working on identity. They stay with you. They come out in different ways at different times, but they stay with you. The ability to keep things inside, not because we're not able to express or we don't want to express, just because we're building more inside than outside. We're outside all the time. We're speaking, we're communicating, we're engaging. I'm not suggesting we all become introverts and hide away and become ascetics that go into the mountains. I'm not suggesting that at all. Just however much we're engaging in the world, make sure we're putting at least as much time into growing the inside, because otherwise that inside empties. Mutelz Rav used to say it's like a Havdalah cup. What the rest of the world gets is only the overflow. But make sure that you're keeping it filling. Once you start tilting your cup and emptying your cup for other people, you get empty very, very quickly. That's when we get exhausted, and that's when we get burnt out. All those symptoms of emptiness, of being drained, are when we're giving people of our identity. Identity is just for you. You're closest to you. Identity is not for the world.